think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 261 of Low Limit Football on this 4th of November 2019. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, Carlos Vela is named MLS MVP for the first time while he sits out the MLS Cup Final. We're going to take a look at that matchup in just a little bit. Liverpool and Manchester City face off this weekend. Can Liverpool realistically seal the season with a victory on the weekend? We'll talk about that. Der Klassiker is also going to kick off this weekend as well, with breaking news that Niko Kovac has been sacked. Who will take over? How will that matchup turn out? And what does this mean for Bayern Munich going into the Champions League? We're going to discuss all of that. And racism rears its ugly head again in England at the Everton-Tottenham match, and of course in Italy with Mario Balotelli at the center of it all. We're going to discuss that and much more with ESPN FC's Andrew Richardson, who will be joining us tonight. But first, my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How are you, my man?
Very well, Joe. I'm probably going to have a few bragging rights after last night's performance in a big World Cup, the U17 one.
I expected a little bit more of a biscotto in that one, but it looks like Paraguay lost a player in the match.
He was he tore his ligaments.
He did. Okay, You know, obviously, I don't know the names. I'm not up to speed on all the names of all the players, obviously, at the U17 World Cup. But we're friends again, though, and we both advance. You get to face, I believe, Argentina, and I get to face Ecuador.
Is it the other way around? Argentina, but, so technically, mm-hmm. we could still play each other again
in the final,
but in the final, correct?
That would be something to see, and I'd be more than happy. Obviously, the U.S. U17 team got bounced out of the tournament at the same time, so. Not a great tournament for them, but we've kind of been keeping a little bit of an eye on that U17 World Cup. It's been a lot of fun to watch, something to watch at night, especially with MLS done now. We've got a little bit of a tournament to watch. So not that you and I are experts on the U17 World Cup, but
Course, but you never know. Maybe there's someone out there that's going to shine and maybe in about, they're 17, 16. So maybe in like 5-10 years time, they might be a world beater.
Exactly. So you never know. And then we could say that we saw them. So
exactly.
So my friend, let's do trivia real quick. It is my honor tonight, and I've seen this mentioned at multiple sources, so I'm not going to cite one particular one, but I've seen this cited a few times. So I want to ask you, Timo Werner, okay, Leipzig striker, we've talked about him, great young talent, speaking of young talents, scored 3 goals and 3 assists in an 8-0 victory over Mainz on the weekend. A magical performance for RB Leipzig, a magical performance by him, scoring a hat trick of goals and assists in the same match. How many times has that been done in the Bundesliga prior to that day?
Oof. You're just asking me for a number.
I'm just asking you for a number. How many times has that been done in the Bundesliga?
Can I get a hint?
Less than 10.
Okay.
All right, I'll give
that's exactly what I was going to ask.
And I will, and I'll give you three chances at the answer.
How's okay. That?
All right, good. So we'll give you that at the end of the show. Opening thoughts, and we kind of alluded to it a little bit in the monologue. MLS Cup Final is this weekend, and unfortunately, Rob, our prediction is not going to hold, as the MLS Cup Final will be a rematch of the three of the last four MLS Cup Finals. What we like to call in America as the rubber match is kind of a baseball term, but we are going to see Seattle Sounders and Toronto FC face off again for this title. Atlanta United eliminated by Toronto FC last week with a 2-1 victory for Toronto. And LAFC eliminated by the Seattle Sounders with a 3-1 victory there as well. Both home teams losing that that conference finals match. You have two experienced teams here, Rob. One thing right now, Jozy Altidore is questionable for the match. He's been injured through the entire run, but he has started to participate in practice again this week. So there is an opportunity for him to possibly play in this final. Let's start there, Rob. I want to get your thoughts on if Altidore is, let's say, 50%, right? Which we can't expect Jozy Altidore to be 100% coming off his muscle injury. Do you start him or do you go with the team that's gotten you there?
I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Okay. I think maybe that's something. I mean, yeah, we understand how reliable Jozy Altidore could be when it comes to playing in these type of games. But at the same time, you know, I feel as if, though, he could still provide an effect. Because, you know, if you do start him, I mean, the worst scenario that could happen is that, you know, he gets injured because of something that happens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's unable to continue. And then your cards are not exactly properly used at the time. So in a way, I think if Toronto are going to play like this, you know, if Greg Vanney's really going to play it smart, conservatively in a way, you know, facing a tough crowd over there in Seattle at CenturyLink Field, a sold out CenturyLink Field, if I'm reading correctly,
yeah.
I think that at best you would want to save him up just in case that you do need it, you know, put him in as a super sub, mm-hmm. when it's maybe you're winning 2-1 down or you're at a draw and you want to play for the win and you bring him in. And I feel like maybe that's where you could see that kind of effect. But yeah, I think it would be best for him to stay on the bench for this one.
And, you know, Alejandro Pozuelo's been playing in his position, you know, the Spaniard. He did score the two goals to knock out NYCFC in the 2-1 victory, you know, a week and a half ago. So It's not like they don't have a capable fill-in for him. But I agree with you. I think that if he's not 100% healthy, bring the ability to bring Jozy Altidore in for last 30 minutes if you need a goal, I think is huge. I think that's something that would go quite well for them. And I think that, you know, ultimately it might be the way that they decide to go. On the flip side, the Seattle Sounders, you know, obviously a load of experience there as well. This is another team that's been there three or four times. Stefan Fry is still in goal for them. Mark Schmelzer, the head coach, you know, he was brought on for Siggy Schmidt as kind of a substitute. Remember when Siggy was fired, they brought Schmelzer on, and all he's done is taken them to three of four finals. And won the MLS Cup, if you think about it. So, you know, what are your thoughts there? I mean, they've gotten great performances. They got goals out of Raul Ruiz Diaz, who you're very familiar with. He had a brace against the LAFC. And by the way, his work rate was ridiculous in that LAFC matchup where he was working, you know, 100% of the pitch. He was easily the best player in the match. Nico Lodero's gotten back on the scoring sheet again. So how do you feel Seattle, you know, treats this particular matchup?
Well, I think they have to treat themselves as favorites. I think going into a game like this, you know, defeating the best team in MLS, maybe one of the best teams in MLS history, and being second place as well. You know, remind you, this isn't a team that finished in the bottom third to six seeds or even the 17. You know, this is a team that finished second, and I think had the fourth best record in all of MLS because it was LAFC, NYCFC, then Atlanta. And then Seattle. So yeah, you kind of have to pick out that you kind of have your deserved finalist from the Western Conference. And I feel that the momentum that they've gotten from beating LAFC over there in Los Angeles as well, and also beating a really good FC Dallas side and a Real Salt Lake side over the course of the MLS playoffs, you would have to give them confidence. I think you're really seeing a lot of good performances from players like Jordan Morris. Raleigh Ruiz Diaz. Nico Lodeiro is having a great MLS Cup playoffs as well. So I think you could easily say that coming into this game, they are the favorites. But as we've seen throughout this entire playoffs, I think favoritism has to take a backseat in this one, because all we've seen has been shocks. And, you know, the familiarity of both these teams as well gives it, makes it even much more even than what we expect. You know, the third final in, what, 4 years, 5 years or something?
Exactly.
Yeah, so there's that familiarity. And you realize that in this type of game, there is no favoritism. Right. So I think on paper, you would have to put Seattle as the clear favorite to win the MLS Cup. But I think just because of these two teams and the history that they both have, especially in MLS Cup finals, anything can happen.
Yeah. You know, Jordan Morris, obviously, you talk about the FC Dallas matchup in the quarterfinals, or actually the first round. Obviously, three goals. FC Dallas took them to extra time, but a Morris hat trick was there. Rui Diaz, again, in that match, scored for them also. So, I mean, they're poised. I mean, they've got it going right. I mean, other than the tight match that they ended up playing against FC Dallas, you know, they were dominant 2-0 against Seattle's Real Salt Lake. And then, like you said, possibly beating one of the best teams in MLS in LAFC, one of the best teams ever. I think that they're poised to possibly take this one. So I guess, you know, let's do a little prediction time here between you and me. You know, any specialty predictions do you want to make, and who do you think wins this match?
I think just because of the performances that they've been going on through this entire playoff run, the fact that I think they have played much more better than what we saw from Toronto in this entire campaign. I think the job that Brian Schmelzer is really doing with this team moving forward, and given the fact as well, you know, he has a title. He did win it a few years ago. I think that we really will see an even final. I think two managers that have won previously, with those respective teams as well, mind you. So I feel as if though we might see a more even game, but I think Seattle will definitely try to go and get the win here. I don't see it being a dominant performance by either team. I think it's going to be a really close game, maybe a 2-1 or a 3-2 or even a 1-0. Mm-hmm. But I think Seattle will get the job done on Sunday.
I'm kind of with you on this one. I feel like home advantage is going to play a big part in this. Last year, you know, much has been made about Atlanta United setting the record for most, the most attended MLS Cup final ever. It was just over 70,000 fans. I believe right now the number is it's a sellout at 69 and change, Rob. But I wouldn't be shocked if all of a sudden tickets started appearing and you had an attendance number that broke that record. I could see that happening. At the same time, I think you're right. I think that, you know, that 12th man, I think there's something real about that 12th man going to Seattle. And again, you know, you've got to give full credit to Toronto here. They've gone on the road. They've beaten Atlanta in Atlanta. They've beaten NYCFC in New York. You know, this is not where, I guess, quote unquote, the road has been a little easier for Seattle, winning two home matches and then having to win that one. But arguably against the best team it's inarguable, the best team in MLS and LAFC. I do feel that, like you said, it's going to be a close match. I think it could be an added extra time match, which, you know, Seattle's not necessarily unfamiliar with, having done that already this postseason. But I do feel, like you said, a 2-1, a 1-0, a 3-2, somewhere in there. I think it's probably more 2-1. I think things will start out tentatively like most championship matches do. But I feel in the end, like you said, I think it's going to be Seattle's to take. But I think it will be a hard-fought match. I think it'll be a physical match, Rob. And I do think a physical match might favor the option of bringing in Jozy Altidore as a super sub. So anything can go last 30 minutes, and if this is like a 1-1 draw, I do think it could go either way. But ultimately, if I had to hang my hat on somebody, I think right now I'm going to hang it on the Sounders and choose them as my MLS Cup champion. So let's table that for now, Rob, because obviously I want to get to our guest, and Andrew Richardson was kind enough to join us earlier, and we got to talk about racism in sport. And it's kind of funny, we had planned on having Andrew a couple weeks ago, just to talk about, he's been a great writer on this particular topic. If you haven't had the chance, make sure you follow him online on Twitter, at Andrew Cesare. and he's been writing some great stuff on this. And it just happened to be that the time we did finally schedule him and got our schedules together so that we could have him on the show, all hell breaks loose in Italy again. Perfect timing for us as broadcasters, but terrible timing because this stuff shouldn't happen. So without further ado, we'd like to bring you the Andrew Richardson interview. Joining us now on Low Limit Football from ESPN FC is Mr. Andrew Richardson. Andrew, how are you tonight?
Yeah, I'm okay. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. How are you guys?
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us. It's amazing how things happen, you know, in world football. You and I, we had discussed coming on the show or having this interview probably a few weeks ago, and I am prepared to have a show or an interview set up for this particular weekend. And then lo and behold, Italy gives us the gift of another racism incident, this time with Mario Balotelli on the pitch for Brescia against Hellas Verona. Take us through what you know about what had happened so far and your thoughts on the entire situation.
Well, obviously the game wasn't live here, so I've only seen I've only had to follow it on Twitter, but obviously something is said from what you can see. And Balotelli, sadly, this is something he's experienced his whole life, so I'm inclined to back his judgment. If he thinks he's being racially abused, I think he's very, very aware of what that is. So it's clear that something happens and he reacts. He has every right to react in the way that he does. Then obviously he carries on playing, scores a fantastic goal. And then, inexplicably, after the match, both the Verona manager Juric and the president Setti claimed that there was no racism. So it's just a bit of a shocking. And then what the thing that, not the worst part about it, but one of the awful things is the fact that Setti has official Twitter account, just tweeted, you know, our game finishes, hashtag we are Calcio, without any kind of sense of just... It's just a complete, there's no sense of irony there. They are actually just tweeting that, thinking that's a normal thing to say, not referencing the horrible incident that's happened once again. And obviously, I have zero faith that they're going to do anything about it.
You know, that's the sad part you just mentioned in your final part, Andrew, the fact that nothing is going to be done and that, you know, incidents like this are going to continue if nothing does happen. I mean, you can understand what Balotelli has been through for his entire life. I mean, from the sense of the start of his career, which is, I think since he was 17 or 18 when he started at in Inter Milan, he suffered racism. It didn't go there. It went all the way to England and then back to Italy. I mean, this is something that is just inexplicably awful to see, really. But I think one of the things that Joe and I always talked about is that, you know, such things are going to continue to happen unless there is something done with these teams personally. Now, obviously, I think the fan penalty has been something that has been discussed various times, you know, banning the fans, the specific fans. But that's not going to change anything in your fines and stuff like that. No, I think, obviously, what has to be done is where you're giving essentially the ultimate financial penalty, and that's, you know, giving these teams losses, docking them points, threatening relegation as well. I mean, is this something that where, you know, the FIGC or Liga Serie A is just afraid of doing, or is this just something of their I guess ignorance into what is really going on here in Serie A?
Well, first of all, it's definitely, definitely ignorance. I mean, look at the fact that the second time this season, they spent more time trying to get videos down of racist incidents and said, yeah, because it's a copyright infringement, not because they care about the racist incident itself, which is obviously, it's a shocking factor. But for me, ultimately, in order to deal with this situation, I think that, like, I don't know what the solution is. If I did know the solution, then I would be steady our president. Well, the thing is, I think it's okay not to know. I think that because none of us are experts, and this is why you need people of color, people who have experienced this race abuse in the positions making serious decisions on how to not just punish, but how to stop this. Because the problem is that what we have is if people making decisions when they're under pressure to do something, and then they always go halfway measures, you know, partial stadium closure for one match. And the fans, it's clear that it's an education problem. You know, if you look at it, an example I use often is the Lazio fans were actually abusing Timo Bakayoko last season, and it happened, I think, 3 games in a short period of time. And in between that trilogy, there was a match against Sampdoria where Felipe Caicedo scored twice, and they were celebrating and chanting his name, and then they went back to racially abusing Timo Bakayoko in the very next game. And it's clear that for these fans, it's not a general racist thing. They're attacking the individual person. So they don't understand. You need to get into the mindset of these people, not think what would stop someone like you or me, who obviously would never do that in the first place, but we need to try to think what would stop someone like who doesn't have our mindset, our understanding of the situation. And this takes work and it takes effort. And that's why I think that, you know, I know that obviously the fact that nothing is being done is absolutely ridiculous, but we need more than just a basic fine or points of junior. We need something that will actually prevent this from happening. And obviously something serious needs to be done, but studies need to be taken. We need to really, really try to get to the root of the problem and see how we can just prevent it from happening. Not just a small, try to go three weeks without it happening or something like that. We need to actually find a way to stop it from happening and educate the people.
You know, Joe, I'll let you jump into this one as well, because, you know, what we saw today with Balotelli and him stepping out of the pitch and saying that enough is enough. I mean, I think the one thing that just really was worth noting is that, you know, Tonali, just is the only one that's shouting at the ref and demanding that something has to be done. I mean, taking out of the football perspective, this is something that really just demonstrates the gap socially in terms of today's youth as well as the older generations.
Yeah, this is something that you and I talked about a little bit off air. I feel like, and Andrew, I don't know if you have any insight into this comment, but I almost feel like the younger generation, the what everyone likes to call as millennials and that sort of thing, although, you know, many can classify them as lazy or whatever, but there's something about the younger generation that is less focused on race and a little more focused on everything else. And I think that you see kind of the older guard, the older you are, the more racism kind of permeates into society. So I think there needs to be a change somewhere. I don't know. You know, Sandro Tonali is my example, where a 19-year-old is the only Brescia player basically yelling at the referee about the racist abuse that Balotelli is suffering during the match. You know, you don't see many of the other players. Many of the players that where he was walking off, many of the players were trying to prevent him from walking off, both his teammates, mostly his teammates. You want to see the team actually kind of band together at that instance and say, you know what, we're all walking off together. Andrew, I mean, I don't know. Do you notice that? I know we talk about racism as a societal issue. Do you notice that maybe as we trend to the younger generations that we don't see quite as much racism, and what we're seeing here is more of an old guard situation? And if that's the case, like the old saying goes, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Can they be corrected, I guess, for lack of a better term?
Well, I mean, I think there is definitely something to the fact that, I mean, that was one of the things I noticed as well. The reaction of the players was a little baffling for me. And I was quite impressed with Tonali. Like, I felt that you can see where someone cares about the issue and other people just want to get back on with the game or something. You can see, and Tonali definitely cared about the issue, like, in that moment. He wasn't like, come on, can we just get over this so we can get playing again? And now, I'm not going to criticize the individuals because I'm just speculating now. But the first thing I thought was, why are the Verona players going to Balotelli rather than their own fans? They should be going to their own fans and saying stop, not telling Balotelli to not get off the pitch. Once Balotelli is racially abused, he has the right. They should thank him for not walking off the pitch. They should thank him for allowing him to finish the game, because that is he did not need to be putting up with that whatsoever, and he was well within his rights. They shouldn't be telling him don't leave, come on, you know. And that's the first point I wanted to make. And in terms of the youthful generation, you know, I mean, it is, you know. Ultimately, Sandro Tonali is one person, but I guess globally right now you think that, like, it is the youth who, growing up in a more multicultural, globalized world, you know, they are more used to multiculturalism. So you know, that's the hope, and I guess we have seen incidents where, like, the old guard who are, you know, who grown up in a different time, you know, comments whether they are outright racist or whether they just don't understand the situation. Like, for example, Bonucci last season, like, you know, when he said that about Moise Kean, you know, it's very clear that, like, whatever you want to say about it, just he has no concept of the situation itself. And I guess that's the main thing I see from the older generation is that, like, at best, they don't understand. At worst, it's sinister. And hopefully they are the new generation who have grown up around people of color, on different ethnicities, you know, more multicultural dressing rooms. Maybe they can bring a new feeling into the game. And, you know, it was great to see Tonali react that way, I have to say.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's something that demonstrates a kind of the gratitude and as well just, you know, having the sheer pride and courage to do it whereas no one else could. But here's the one thing I think now what we see this, because I think with Balotelli acting this way, I think this is obviously going to send a chain reaction all across Europe and all around the world. You know, do we see something like this happening again? I mean, you know, unfortunately it will. But do we see something where we see other players just, you know, saying, you know, enough is enough, and then they all just walk out? Because we almost did see instances, if you obviously remember the England-Bulgaria game, where, you know, they were starting to leave the pitch. I mean, you know, I think it's going to come to a breaking point where something like this will happen at a large scale in a top five league. That's, you know, that's just going to send off a catalyst of so many things where that they have to recognize that, you know, there is a huge problem and there has to be something that has to be done. And therefore, they have every right to express themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that the more and more, like, Serie A, unfortunately, because it's marketed terribly across the world, the main headlines globally they're getting now are these racist incidents. And the more Balotelli does something like this, the more people talk about it, which is what we want. We want this. We need this needs to be highlighted, and this Serie A needs to be made to hold held accountable. But my concern is that Verona will now, they feel they are the victims in this. All of a sudden, you can see the quote, the you know, Juric's comments after the game, even Seti coming out, Verona people are not racist. It's like when the managers and owners come out and make comments like this, if Verona are now punished, they will feel they are the victims. And then you don't know what their response is going to be to that. They're not going to sit there and be like, all right, you know, they feel empowered now. So there needs to be, people high up need to start taking responsibility and stop making excuses for it. And unfortunately, you know, at the moment it's happening almost on a weekly basis in Serie A. And I think eventually, you know, someone's going to walk off the pitch, or, you know, we saw it with Muntari a few years ago when he just walked off the pitch, and obviously that didn't unfortunately change much. But, you know, today, I think today is the first time we've seen a player actively react to it in that way. And, you know, the fact that he booted the ball and just walked off, I think that, you know, I hope that he's made others who are going to be in that situation feel empowered to just do what they feel in that situation, because they do not have to put up with that. They shouldn't have to put up with that.
You know, and I think you use a great term there when you say the word empower. You know, Balotelli, as much as people either like him or hate him, you know, in this instance, he's sort of a trailblazer. He's shown the path where you can walk off the pitch. You can stand up for yourself and stand up for what is going on. And I think it's amazing that, you know, in this day and age, we talk about Mario Balotelli as being always the difficult one, that we need to take an example from him and say, yes, we can kick the ball in the stands and walk off the pitch because what's going on isn't right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, you know, I saw an interview with him last season when he was in France with Italian TV, where he was talking about racism suffered throughout his career. And he was just saying, I mean, in Italy, it is so much worse. And he wasn't even playing in Italy at the time. So the fact is that this is something that he's had to put up with forever now. Whether he's a good person, a bad person, a horrible person, a diver, a cheat, whatever people might not. I don't mean, obviously, I don't think these things, but if anyone did think that, there's never going to be a justification for that kind of abuse. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing. So his personality, like, is not really, it doesn't matter. But the fact that he again, I think we should be, the fact that he's making a stand, the fact that he's becoming a voice in this system, he has been throughout his career, is a very brave thing to do. And I think we should acknowledge that, because shouldn't not take that for granted, because it's not, you know, this is just a young person who wants to enjoy his life. He shouldn't have to deal with this and shouldn't have to put himself in this position over and over again.
Agreed. Now, you know, looking forward, I mean, we've seen the incidents of racism with Balotelli. It's happened before. We saw Cagliari earlier this season with Romelu Lukaku. We saw them also do it with Kalidou Koulibaly. We've seen Lazio do it in a Europa League match against Rennes. We've seen, and actually they'll be playing with closed stands this week when Celtic come into play into the Stadio Olimpico. We've also seen them do it in the Coppa Italia as well. Italy has, I mean, I think Europe has a racism problem. We can look back to Bulgaria versus England recently. We can look at Chelsea versus Man City with Raheem Sterling. Europe has a racism problem, but it is definitely front and center in Italy. Italy recently announced, or the FIGC recently announced, that they're going to use VAR in these stadiums for these racist abuse and racist chants and see if they can do something about it. What else needs to be done besides pointing a video camera and finding out who these people are and you know, eliminating them from the stands?
Well, I mean, you know, that's a great short-term measure to get them out of the stands. You know, it stops it for now, but it's the fact that it's so normalized in Italian stadiums to react that way in so many different places. You know, I mean, we saw the incident yesterday with Roma and Napoli as well with the territorial chanting. It happens so often, and you know, I disagree with this idea that the Premier League has got it right, because I think there are still issues in the Premier League. But when you go to a Premier League stadium, it feels as if like that kind of thing is just not even gone. It's just not even a concept around. There's no feeling that that's just, you know, if someone did that, the general feeling around would be like people would tell them to like be quiet. They report them or they do something about it. Whereas in Italy, it becomes normalized. And then I can imagine that, you know, there will be that kind of mob culture in that with people around, you know, joining in because it feels such a normal thing to do. And there needs to be the Serie A need to employ experts, people of color, people who understand the situation. And then, in fact, I don't have the answers. You know, I wish I did, but I don't. And I think that, like, I think one of the things that people mistake if they're not saying, let's deduct points, let's make fines, it seems like they don't care. But like, the fact is that, like, we're not experts. None of us are experts in this field. And I think it's okay not to have the answers. And that it doesn't mean that you don't care. And I think that, like, what Serie A needs to do is they need to employ real people who really understand the situation and then take advice from them. Because we've got people who are, you know, old white men who do not understand the situation. And if they ever do anything, it will just be a basic level just to appease people because of the pressure they're under. Whereas what we need is people who understand the situation to really bring about change.
I concur 100%. And I think it goes back to my argument about how as we trend younger, we see less and less racism in younger generations versus older generations. It tends to be a quote-unquote old school thing. Rob, I want to throw this one at you first, and then I'm going to go back to Andrew with it. I've always said, or at least I've started to say, that the way we punish these teams is not necessarily by closing these stands and you know, like we're seeing in Lazio midweek here in the Europa League. I think you need to hurt them with points. I think when teams get relegated, teams lose money. And having clubs and teams lose money directly as a result or as a consequence, I think is a massive, a bigger blow than, let's say, closing a couple of stands. That's minor compared to what you could do to them, you know, when you relegate a team. So, I mean, Rob, do you think that we should see point reductions in this, you know, starting with this Hellas Verona match against Brescia? Obviously Hellas win the match 2-1. Maybe the results reversed. Maybe we deducted 3 points from them. We give them to Brescia and we move forward. You know, that would be a bigger blow. Cause I mean, when you look at the advertisements or the tweets in the end, it was all about how Hellas pick up the 3 points. Juric picks up the 3 points, where it would be much more damning where Juric would have picked up the 3 points, but then lost them plus lost three more because of racist chants. Do you feel that that's where we need to go now to kind of really drop a heavy hammer on some teams?
I think so. I think so. I think, yes, it would be unfortunate for, you know, the fans that don't have to deal with this and have to, you know, succumb to seeing, you know, their childish fans do such a thing. But in the end, I think that's where you're going to have to, they have to be hurt. I think that's exactly what has to be done, really, because it sends a message to the club. It sends a message to the league as well. And I think to UEFA as well, to see that, you know, they are serious about this and that action has to be done and that, you know, they'll do it as much as they can until something gets fixed. I mean, you know, this is just how it is. And I feel like, you know, if players are going to suffer from this every game, then, you know, then the team should as well. You know, even if it was for a bunch of, you know, stupid fans, because that's how I see it. I generally think that's exactly how you have to do it, because it takes a bit of a financial risk, but, you know, it's a risk worth taking because of the actions that you do on a pitch, in the stands as well.
Andrew, I want to throw the same thing at you. I mean, are we at the point now where point deductions are going to be severe but necessary to kind of change the behavior?
Well, so first of all, I think what we need to do is we need to make it the number one punishment, as in when this happens, this needs to be the most punishable offense on the calendar, because at the moment you're seeing fines given out for incorrect tags for coaches and stuff like that on the touchlines or whatever. It's ridiculous. But clubs, I think there is definitely an issue that clubs don't prioritize dealing with this problem because the sanctions are not severe enough to prioritize it. So that, I think we need to put pressure on the clubs to deal with it. So obviously financial points deductions, that's the level that we need to be looking at. But again, when it comes to specifics, for me, it's all about trying to get into the mindset of somebody who, it's just a normal thing to give out racist abuse during a game. What would prevent that? What would stop that person? What would stop those people? Because I think too often we think about what would stop ourselves in that situation, but we're not like that. We understand the situation better, and we need to try to think. And it's like, would, if someone is doing it, knowing that they could get the stadium closed, would a potential 3-point deduction stop them? And I'm not saying it would, or I'm not saying it wouldn't. I'm just trying to. These are the conversations that we need to think. These are the debates that we need to have, and this is what we need to try to understand. And I think that's what we need to start. We need to think, what would actually stop a person who thinks that's a normal thing to do from doing it? Well, definitely we need to prioritize it and we need to make it severe. But I think it is about the in order to really stop it, rather than just a short term fix, is to try to understand how these people think, what would actually stop them. So that's my take.
I couldn't agree with you more. Andrew, before we let you go, where can people find your work? Your work has been excellent on this particular topic. Where can people go to find your work?
Thank you very much for that. Basically, my ESPN articles are on Twitter, which is, my handle is Andrew Chairsetti, all one word. Yeah. So on there. Thanks a lot, guys.
Fantastic. Thank you for coming on the show. We look forward to having you back again soon.
I look forward to being here. Thanks a lot.
And thanks again to Andrew Richardson from joining us from ESPN FC. It was great to talk to him on such what's really a terrible topic. But hopefully Italy gets their act together and gets that situated very soon. Rob, before we jump in some of our other topics, we have some news coming out of South America, my friend. So I'm hoping you could give me the lowdown on it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think the news that we have been bothered around by and tossing it around has been this possible Libertadores final being moved from Chile. But we're going to talk about the secondary tournament. We're going to talk about the Sudamericana, who actually will have its final this Saturday in Paraguay. Will be at La Nueva Oya, Cerro Porteño's home ground. And we're going to have a first champion for the first time ever. We're going to have Colón de Santa Fe, the team from Argentina, who are off to their first continental final. Mm-hmm. And we have a familiar name that I think you remember, Joe. If you remember from 3 years ago, they made it to a Libertadores final. Independiente del Valle from Ecuador.
That's right.
So for the first time, we're going to have a new champion of the Copa Sudamericana, a team with continental history and a team without it. And generally speaking, I think it's an even final. I think we really have to recognize the road that all these teams went through to get to this final. I think the big one, obviously, would be for Colón and Independiente del Valle knocking out Brazilian giants, Atlético Mineiro and Corinthians, respectively. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Independiente del Valle also knocked out Independiente back in the quarterfinals. So looking at this real quick, I think we're in for an even final. I think given how good the teams have been so far, I think one of the good players that I've enjoyed watching is Luis Miguel Rodriguez. They call him Pulga, Flea, mm-hmm. which is also a nickname for Lionel Messi. But the talent that he has, he's a diminutive second striker, the captain. He's like, I think, 5'6". really, really talented player, really works hard, has that ambition. And I think he's the one to watch for. I think if anyone's going to watch this final, I think all eyes are going to be on him. So definitely a final to take. I think Cologne fans are going to really, given the proximity of both Argentina and Paraguay, they're going to fill out that stadium there. So we're in for a good treat. November 9th on this Saturday. The kickoff is actually during a weird time, Joe. If you remember, obviously, Libertadores or two Americana games happen at night. This game will happen at 5:30 in the afternoon. And just checking the weather from over there in Paraguay at the moment, I think they're going to need some extra water. It's supposed to be 96 on game day.
Oh, that is brutal. Refresh my memory. Independiente del Valle, didn't they lose to Gremio in the final?
No, they lost to Atlético Nacional.
It was Atlético Nacional. Okay. I do remember that. I wasn't sure if it was one or the other, but I do remember that. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to watch. It'll run up against, and this is, again, where maybe South America got something right because they posted that match at 5:30. Could have gone a little later, too, given the heat. But
well, no, there's a time difference. So the game will be here at 3:30.
Okay, but 5:30 locally there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 3:30 makes it a little tight because you know, with the Saturday matchups, actually I'm sorry, the Sunday matchups are the ones that are interesting, so having it on Saturday is better. But I noticed, and we'll give the matches of the week a little later on, but that definitely should be fun to watch between two teams looking for their first title. And then we also have a little Libertadores news.
Yeah, we also do have a few Libertadores news. So obviously there isn't an official announcement made from either CONMEBOL, but the big announcement obviously coming from here is that the FA presidents of Argentina, Chile, and Brazil will meet in Santiago de Chile tomorrow, November 5th, alongside the presidents of the two finalists, the Flamengo and River, to essentially revise all the aspects of how the final will be played, where it will be played, and hopefully that by the time tomorrow happens, that we will get a final decision, because as you remember, the Ministry of Sport in Chile gave an announcement saying that the final was indeed suited and that would be prepared, but the announcement is going to be made by CONMEBOL to see what they will do, if they will keep the final in Santiago or move it to possibly a different area. There had been already rumors that it could be delayed 1 week, which would cause tremendous logistical problems, Joe, given that all these teams, their fans have already booked tickets and planned their trips months, weeks in advance. So this is going to cause this is going to be a discussion that is definitely not going to go away. And hopefully that we will get a final played before the end of the year, because both these teams also need to go to Qatar for the Club World Cup. And that's all I have at the moment. We don't know what can happen, so we have to wait for what happens tomorrow, what CONMEBOL will say, and hopefully we get a solution.
If not,
this is going to be one carousel that's not going to continue, that's going to continue to roam around South America.
Wouldn't expect anything less out of South America. So let's go back across the pond over to England, because we have a massive, massive match this weekend. Obviously, Liverpool and Manchester City are going to take on each other at Anfield on the weekend. Liverpool, obviously, both of them in Champions League qualifiers. Liverpool is going to play on Tuesday against Genk. At home, City is going to be on the road in Italy at Atalanta. A couple of matches that they should manage to handle themselves on the City side. I believe City can secure or all but secure a position in the round of 16 of the Champions League. So they will have that on their plate. But coming back to the match, we're looking at two teams that are right now separated by 6 points. Liverpool, only one of two teams in the top five leagues in Europe that is still unbeaten, the other one being Juventus. This is really a spot now that if Liverpool puts 9 points between them and Manchester City, I know we're only a third of the way through the season. That'll be 12 matches. But, Rob, we're a third of the way through the season, and 9 points is a massive, massive blow. And they've only conceded 9 goals so far in 11 matches, Liverpool have. So there's really no sign that they're going to let up. They're going to get Alisson back soon as well. So there's really no sign that they're going to let up. I mean, do you see them, first of all, Liverpool running the table unbeaten in the Premier League?
No, I don't think so. I think eventually, given the – you would say – I think one of the issues for Liverpool, I think, heading into this season is that, you know, even though they did win the Champions League, and almost won the Premier League last season, I still feel that they maybe do need some improvement on the bench and in depth-wise. It's still the same team. But at the same time, you worry about a long season. You think about 38 games in the Premier League. You think about how long they're going to be in their domestic competitions and the Champions League. That's a lot of mileage for a lot of these players playing at least 50 games a season. So I don't see them going unbeaten. I think given the surprises that we obviously know in the Premier League that they are going to slip up at one point, it's 11 games. 11 games out of 38 is still way too early to decide. But I think that given the fine start that they've been having and kind of the fluttering start that City has had in their first 11 games, you don't think Liverpool will slip up. I mean, leagues are not decided in November. They're decided way later. Mm-hmm. But you think that if Liverpool do get a victory here over the weekend against Manchester City, that you know they open a big gap between both the teams. 9 points is still reversible in a way, but it's going to be tough. It really is. I think the City side needs to find something clicking. Otherwise, teams below them, the Leicesters and your Chelseas, and given the form that both those teams are in, they could pass them.
Yeah.
And they could challenge Liverpool.
It's amazing because they're only separated by 2 points. At the moment, we have City on 25 points and Leicester and Chelsea both on 23. Chelsea on a great run of form as well. They've won their last 5 matches. So they are, you know, they're doing the right things under Frank Lampard at this point. Obviously, they're getting a resurgent Christian Pulisic as well, scored 4 goals in 2 matches so far. So he's running pretty well. This is a big spot. You know, like I said, if Liverpool managed to win the match and granted they're home, so that's a huge benefit to them as well. City's going to need to find a way to keep them close. And really at that point, to keep them close, they're going to need Liverpool to drop points. And right now, the only points Liverpool have dropped is a 1-1 draw at United. Otherwise, they haven't. There's going to be an opportunity again in the spring for City to take them on in the reverse fixture at home. So there's a way to pick up points there. And obviously, like you said, Rob, the depth that Liverpool have is not as deep as City. You know, you go back and look at the transfer window, the only depth that Liverpool added, they're actually using right now, which is Adrian coming in on the bench for a goal. And they're using him because Alisson is injured. But otherwise, there's not much. They've obviously lost Joel Matip for a little bit as well. So there's holes there that can be exploited. Now, again, if City do manage to win this match at Anfield, then it's game on. 3 points will separate the two of them. I also think, depending on what Leicester and Chelsea do on the weekend as well, Leicester are going to be home to Arsenal. Chelsea are going to be home to Crystal Palace. You could possibly see this matchup or this league where, you know, just 2 or 3 weeks ago, Rob, we were talking about this as a runaway league, kind of tighten back up at the top and see it really become a 4-team race. I think at this point, Arsenal, you know, and then behind Arsenal, you have teams like Sheffield, Bournemouth, Brighton, Crystal Palace. United's all the way down at 10th. Tottenham are floundering badly. You see a lot of teams that are slipping way, way back at this point. This could become a 4-team race, but I think it's really dependent upon Manchester City to make it a 4-team race. If they do drop the result at Liverpool on the weekend, at best, it's going to be a 2-team race, and it might not even be City as one of the 2 teams. So going to be interesting to see that particular matchup as it unfolds on the weekend. And we'll give you the start time for that in just a little bit. The other big matchup on the weekend, Rob, is over in Germany with Der Klassiker between Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. That matchup, you know, taking a look at that quickly, that one's got a little bit of a twist to it because, like I had said in the monologue, Niko Kovac was sacked yesterday, I believe. So yep. Now losing Niko Kovac, you lose that stability. You go into the Champions League matchup. Bayern is also a team that is very, very close to solidifying their spot. They're going to be at home to Olympiacos, so they don't have to go on that trip to Greece again. They've also got Tottenham Hotspur in their group where they could, you know, obviously we know what Spurs has given us right now. So I think Bayern can really solidify that final spot or that first spot in Group B without having to worry about it too much. They can focus a little bit more on Der Klassiker, but without any direction at the helm, it becomes a very, very, very tricky situation. And currently neither team leads the Bundesliga. Dortmund in second place on 19 points. Bayern in third place. They're tied on 18 points, but tied with Leipzig, Freiburg, and Schalke, which is an amazing race going on there. Mönchengladbach Currently, you have a little bit of separation with 3 points between them and Dortmund. So, for me, looking at this particular matchup, and this is, you know, one of the marquees, Bayern's going to have the fortune of having this match at home. Also, with the Olympiacos match at home, it means the team doesn't have to travel. That does well for the rest. Dortmund, on the other hand, in their Champions League matchup, I believe, if I remember correctly, and I'm looking for it quickly, are at home to Inter. So a very, very difficult matchup for them. They're in a group that's really the fight for their lives. We've called it the group of death. And then they have to go to Bayern Munich and play there. So a much tougher path here. I mean, I could see, despite the juggling at the head coach position, I could see Bayern taking this one over Dortmund. I'd like your thoughts, Rob, on the match, and then I think we'll talk about the coaching.
Yeah, I think heading into this match, it really is going to be a case of two teams just still trying to fight for that title. I think because of how well Mönchengladbach has been doing, and even Dortmund as well to an extent, you know, they're finding their form. They even beat Mönchengladbach a couple weeks ago as well, so they're technically in really good position on form to do well. Comparable to, you know, they haven't lost their last five games in comparison to Bayern, who have lost two. Now you start to see what happens with this coach. I mean, obviously there isn't still a clear favorite to see who will replace Kovac at Bayern Munich. But I think just because the form that they're in, I think, and also I think this shows for Dortmund. I think this is a perfect confidence booster for them, because you think about all the times that both these teams have played each other and that Bayern has always had the upper hand, always, in these type of games. Wouldn't it be like some sort of sweet revenge and maybe humiliation for them to not only see one of their rivals lose their coach, but also to see them lose on the weekend as well? I mean, that would be wonderful. But, you know, both these teams are separated by 1 point. You still have Leipzig and Freiburg and Schalke as well. This race is incredible in the Bundesliga so far. I think it's really been one of the most entertaining, I think, all across the top five leagues in Europe. But I feel as if, though, with Dortmund, I think they have the advantage of playing this type of game, being in the form they are. The confidence is way up there. I don't see why they can't win this one. Personally, I'd side with Dortmund in this one. I think they are just the better team, and I feel they're more boosted up in confidence because of everything that's going on with them and also for Bayern.
Yeah, I think the turmoil that they see across the way at Bayern Munich, I think, does, you know, give them some hope in this one, and I think they could possibly turn this one around. I don't think this will be the be-all, end-all of matches for Bayern or Borussia Dortmund if one of them do drop the result. But at the same time, I think it's interesting to see that this match comes up now with such turmoil. You know, let's look at the usual suspects. You know, a lot of the names that have been mentioned to take over as head coach: Arsene Wenger, Jose Mourinho, Max Allegri. The interesting one is Erik ten Hag, the Ajax manager. Interesting that one's come out quite a bit, and one that everyone likes to throw out there as well is Jupp Heynckes, who's come in repeatedly. Remember when Pep Guardiola moved on, Jupp Heynckes was brought in to kind of steady the ship until they brought Niko Kovac in. For me, I know a lot of people don't like the idea of Mourinho or Allegri, but I feel like one of those two coaches would be the best option because they're stabilizing. You know, they're kind of bland, they're kind of boring in terms of their football, but they're stabilizing, and I think that's the kind of thing right now that Bayern need, and I think that would serve them well in the Bundesliga that has really become a prolific offensive league. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, everyone likes to point the finger because Erik ten Hag is the flavor of the month, given what he's done at Ajax so far, but what are your thoughts on who should take this job over?
Well, I don't think it's going to be ten Hag because he literally just said in his press conference today that he's not leaving Ajax this season, so he's out of the window. But I personally, if I had to pick one, I think it's Mourinho. I think he's someone that has been rumored to go to Germany for long. And to be fair, I mean, he's done it in England. He's done it in Spain. He's done it in Italy. Obviously, he hasn't done it in France yet. But there's only one league that he needs to check out, and that's Germany. Why not provide a challenge? And given how Mourinho is well-known, recognized around the world, taking a big clubs like Chelsea, Inter, Real Madrid, Manchester United, Bayern makes sense. It makes sense in a way. And I think he has that challenge. I think I saw an interview the other day with Bastian Schweinsteiger saying that, you know, Mourinho would always ask him about Bayern Munich, and that I saw that he was learning German as well. I mean, I think it's destiny. So I don't think it'd be boring, though. I think he might do something. And I think he, with the tools that he has and these, those type of players that he has at his disposal, I think he could really do something there. And, sure. You know, it's a new challenge. And I feel as if, though, it provides him an opportunity to help this Bayern side in a situation where, you know, if they want to win the league, then you have to look at someone that has won multiple times at various different clubs, and you're getting a winner. I mean, this isn't to say that Allegri isn't a winner, but I just feel like when you're getting a manager that has proven more in different leagues, your option is Mourinho.
Yeah, I concur with that. I think, and it's also for Mourinho, it's a legacy building job. I wouldn't shock me if we heard reports that he was pushing to get this job. But I think it's a job that where he would fit well. It's an experienced team. They would know how to handle a guy like Mourinho, and Mourinho would know how to handle a team like them. So I think that's probably one of the best fits you could see. So looking ahead, Rob, real quick, I just want to run through the Champions League real quick. We've got a few permutations, you know, teams that can qualify and get their way through to the next level. On match day 4, which is coming up on Tuesday and Wednesdays, and we'll give you matches of the week coming up in a moment. Atleti, Bayern Munich, Juventus City, Napoli, and Paris Saint-Germain can all go through on match day 4. Napoli would go through with a victory, and as long as Genk doesn't beat Liverpool, you know, that's one of the options there. Paris would be through with a win or a draw if Galatasaray doesn't beat Real Madrid. They would be confirmed in first place if the other game, if they win and the other game is a draw. Group B, Bayern Munich would, and I'm reading this all from UEFA. You can get the from UEFA.com. Bayern would be through with a win or with a draw if Spurs beat Red Star. And Bayern would be confirmed first place if they win and the other match is a draw. On Group C, Man City would be through with a win and would be confirmed in first place if they win and the other match is a draw. You go to Group D, Juve and Atleti could win, could go through. Juve with a win, Atleti would be through if they win and Lokomotiv lose, which means Juventus won. So you could see all of those teams go through on match day 4. And to be honest with you, I think for the most part, those results are going to hold true. And I think we're going to get about 4 or 5 teams moving on to the round of 16 in the Champions League this weekend. So let me give you, Rob, the matches of the week coming up this week, and then we'll get back to the trivia questions. So on Tuesday, we have Chelsea-Ajax at 3 p.m. in the Champions League and Borussia Dortmund-Inter Milan at 3 p.m. Those are the ones to watch on Tuesday. On Wednesday, PSG Club Bruges at 3 p.m. with Lokomotiv Moscow-Juventus as well at 3 p.m. And Thursday in the Europa League, Lazio and Celtic will face off. Celtic will advance with a win, and Lazio need the win to actually remain in the hunt to advance in the Europa League. On Saturday, we gave you the Der Klassiker, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, 12:30 p.m. And if you wanted to run over to Spain, Eibar, Real Madrid at 12:30 p.m. as well. On Sunday, the big day, Liverpool, Manchester City, 11:30 a.m. Juve, AC Milan, and Serie A at 2:45 p.m. Marseille, Lyon at 3 p.m. in Ligue 1. And the MLS Cup final will also kick off at 3 p.m. with the Seattle Sounders hosting Toronto FC. Rob, I gave you the trivia question a little earlier. Timo Werner was able to 3 goals and 3 assists in the match against Mainz on the weekend. You know, certainly one for the record books. How many people in the Bundesliga have ever had 3 goals and 3 assists in the same matchup?
I have a feeling this is a trick question. I feel like it isn't, but I'm just going to take a guess here, and because I generally don't have no idea. 4. I'll say 4.
That guess is wrong. Remember, I gave you 3 guesses, so that one's wrong.
Okay. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this is the second time that's happened?
That would be incorrect.
Okay. I don't know. 5.
This one is 1 for the record books because it's the first time it's ever happened.
Oh, I knew it. Yep. I knew it.
First time.
I would think you would think that, though. You would think that. Wait, such a record.
Yeah.
It would have been done before. I knew it.
Yep.
Damn it. Oh, well.
It has never been done before. Question. According to multiple sources, it has never been done before. Timo Werner, the first player to score 3 goals and 3 assists in the same match on the 8-0 victory over Mainz. So without any further ado, my friend, I have nothing left on the closing docket, so let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right. And so for episode 261 of Low Limit Football, thanks again to Andrew Richardson for joining us on the show. Next week, we're going to take a look back at the MLS Cup final. We're going to look ahead to European qualifiers because we have another international break coming up, and we'll give you the results of the Copa Sudamericana final as well. So for episode 261 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.